Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Where is J.D. Vance? What's up with the unique absence of Vice President J.D. Vance surrounding the Maduro removal and the following aftermath? Well, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt just got asked this exact question after many outlets have noticed J.D. Vance has kind of been gone. Even when Donald Trump was flanked by his closest advisors, you'd think his own vice president would be there. But instead, you see Pete Hegseth, you see Marco Rubio, you see other close advisors, but there is no J.D. Vance. There's even an article titled J.D. Vance's Notable Absence on Venezuela. We'll break that down, but let's just start from the very beginning of this press conference where the topic of Venezuela is brought up, and we get asked the question. She gets asked the question, who is running Venezuela? This is the easiest, but also the trickiest gotcha question apparently the administration is facing because they don't know who is running Venezuela.
Thank you, Karoline. The president has been adamant that he is now in charge of Venezuela, but Delcy Rodriguez said the government of Venezuela runs her country, no one else, saying, quote, there's no external agent governing Venezuela. So which one is it?
Let me just be very clear. This is the first time that I've addressed Venezuela from the podium since being back and since the historic and incredibly successful military operation, law enforcement operation conducted by our United States military that you all saw and the world witnessed last week.
Okay, congrats. The military operation was successful. That is fine, but that's usually not the trickiest part of regime change historically. I can concede, yes, the military was in, they were out. They got Maduro, they did it successfully. But Delcy Rodriguez, Maduro's handpicked vice president, is still in power, still running the country. This is not regime change at this point. It is regime coercion. We are like taking on a long-term, coercive, bullying strategy with a Latin American country. When has that ever worked?
The skill, the might of the United States military.
We get it. It was a good operation.
Our country, under the leadership of this president, is on full display to the rest of the world. And let's just set the record straight. There isn't another military in the world who could have pulled off this operation. There is not another president in the world or in our nation's history who had the courage to authorize such a mission. And I think the world has taken notice that America is truly back.
I mean, we've taken out multiple dangerous people across the globe.
With respect to Venezuela, the Trump administration, led by Secretary Rubio, the vice president, and the...
Over the past few decades, we've taken out many notably bad figures across the global stage in a very clean manner. Osama bin Laden is one that comes to mind.
With respect to Venezuela, the Trump administration, led by Secretary Rubio, the vice president, and the president's entire national security team, is in close correspondence with the interim authorities in Venezuela. We obviously have maximum leverage over the interim authorities in Venezuela right now, and the president has made it very clear that this is a country within the United States, the Western Hemisphere, close by the United States, that is no longer going to be sending illegal drugs to the United States of America.
Wait a minute. They are again changing the official position as to why this is happening. They were conceding it was for oil for the past few days, but now it's about drugs again, even though the vast majority of drug overdoses come from fentanyl, which comes from China. She then says, quote, we have maximum leverage over the interim authorities. The only way we could have maximum leverage over these authorities is if we're dangling the threat of more military force over their head, which means we may go further boots on the ground. This entire thing was marketed as a quick in and out, but that is not what it has turned into. This is very, very likely going to devolve either into some sort of civil war in Venezuela where the U.S. has to intervene, or we're just going to have to further coerce this administration with military force. Karoline Leavitt, right after this, gets asked, how will we do this? Will there be troops involved? Will there be further military force? And Karoline Leavitt again says, we reserve the right to use more military force. She is admitting right here, the plan isn't going according to plan, if there was one in the first place. Ideally, regime change ends with the regime being changed to a more sustainable pro-democracy ally. That is not what is happening.
To invest billions in Venezuela, how will the U.S. reassure that their workers will be safe in Venezuela? Could there be troops involved?
At this point in time, as you know, there are no troops on the ground in Venezuela. The president, of course, reserves the right to use the United States military if necessary. It's not something he wants to do. Diplomacy is always the first option. As you saw, he tried that with Nicolas Maduro, but unfortunately, he was an illegitimate dictator and an unserious person. And so President Trump authorized this law enforcement operation, and now Nicolas Maduro is sitting in a prison cell in New York. So certainly, the president is going to do what's in the best interests of the American people, and that includes workers from our energy and oil industry as well.
Okay, so now the president of the United States, let me get this straight, is going to potentially use the military in other countries to protect private corporate profits. We are going to be extracting oil via business leaders and oil executives going over to Venezuela and scouting it out. And if this goes awry, because by the way, she just called Maduro an illegitimate leader, which I agree with. Maduro was an illegitimate president. He rigged the election. But his vice president, by extension, is also illegitimate then. So we are working with the illegitimate regime that we tried to topple but failed to basically extract as much profit as possible using the military if necessary. This is some disturbing, disturbing stuff that Caroline Leavitt is spinning on the White House stand like it's nothing. This is quite literally North Korean levels of propaganda to justify the invasion of an external. These are very likely the exact type of press conferences that are held in Russia to justify territorial expansion. Let's watch this clip of Caroline Leavitt being asked, where is J.D. Vance? He has had a notable absence. Remember, he wasn't one of the people encircling Donald Trump. This article reads, J.D. Vance's notable absence on Venezuela was the vice president's exclusion from the operation in Venezuela on an expression of his anti-interventionist ideology or a political calculation. I don't think that it's because he disagrees with the Trump admin. J.D. Vance agrees with every damn thing the Trump admin does because he's kind of just a brown nose. I do think it could be a political calculation to maybe not be as involved in an operation that could go south. It could be that the president hasn't really asked him to be in the inner circle in the same way that he oftentimes blocks out Tulsi Gabbard, according to reports. The director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, has not been allowed in closed-door meetings because Trump, I guess, just doesn't lean on her or trust her. There could be a multitude of reasons, but Caroline Leavitt, of course, gives her propaganda.
Before these oil companies right now. Caroline. Stephen.
Thank you, Caroline, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
The New Yorker had a story yesterday on the vice president, and it questioned his, quote, notable absence on Venezuela. And the subheadline asked, was the vice president's exclusion from the operation in Venezuela an expression of his anti-interventionist ideology or political calculation? Would you be able to discuss the vice president's role in Venezuela policy?
I did see that report in the New Yorker, and quite frankly, I laughed out loud because it's very clear it's a fake report that's trying to sow distrust and division amongst the president and his team. Let me just be very clear. The vice president has been involved in all policy. He is the right-hand man of the president on all policy matters, including Venezuela policy. He was, of course, read in and deeply involved in this operation from the very beginning. And he was present on the night of the operation via secure communication at a different location as to not damage the operational secrecy of this mission that was so incredibly important to ensure that this mission could be carried out successfully without endangering our troops.
This is just such BS. You know it's already a bad situation when you have to reassure the American people that the vice president is not being pushed out. But even if we look at the photos of the Situation Room on the night of, you see famous faces like Marco Rubio and Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth, but there is no J.D. Vance there. They said that they had to signal him in on some sort of like FaceTime communication, but it's just BS. They were searching on Twitter in the background, if you guys have heard of this. They were searching Venezuela on Twitter and looking at like memes and updates from random Twitter accounts to see what people were saying about the situation. They were using Twitter to monitor the situation, and J.D. Vance was left out of the Situation Room. He wasn't there for the briefing the next day. Where the hell is the vice president? It's especially ironic that a lot of the main, you know, attacks against Vice President Kamala Harris was that she was absent throughout a lot of the big events through the 4 years. They would ask, where is Kamala Harris? They would say, why is she not involved or trusted? And now the same thing is being repeated with J.D. Vance. And in fact, I swear to God, the Trump admin has just been a mirror of all of the worst accusations against the Biden administration. So just a good example is Trump accused Biden of using the auto pen to sign everything throughout the 4 years, but now we have repeated videos of Trump not even knowing who he's pardoned, like notorious drug traffickers, the former president of Honduras, notorious criminals like the former, or I guess the owner of Binance, was pardoned by Donald Trump, and he said, "I don't know the guy. I don't know anything about it." There's this new argument that the administration has been using. It's the hemispheric dominance argument. They're saying that essentially they're trying to flip the Monroe Doctrine on its head and say, because the United States has its own hemisphere, we can therefore meddle in the backyard of anybody within our hemisphere. The Monroe Doctrine basically just said European countries and people in the other hemisphere should not have the ability to reach over into the Western hemisphere. Trump is trying to flip that and say that we can basically do whatever we want over here. But that is wrong for a few reasons. Number one, it concedes that China and Russia can do whatever the hell they want in their hemisphere. And also, these are just not the rules we play by anymore. This is 2026. We have benefited from decades and decades where we haven't gone with a global war. There were two global wars back to back. And then after World War II, leaders came together and tried to create an alliance to stop those from happening. Of course, there are outliers like Russia, like some Middle Eastern wars that we've started, which are obviously bad, but we haven't devolved into global chaos. This idea that we can split the world up into hemispheres while the United States dominates our hemisphere, militarily invades countries in our hemisphere, and Russia dominates their hemisphere, this is just going to turn into an awful, massive world war once again. Here's Caroline Leavitt floating this theory.
I'm sorry? It reports that the administration has essentially demanded that Venezuela cut ties with China, Russia, Iran, and Cuba. Can you confirm that?
Well, those alleged demands were made in a classified briefing by Secretary Rubio, and I know that there's a lot of leaks coming out of these classified briefings, so I'm not going to confirm or deny or get into what the Secretary has said in classified settings to members of Congress. But I think that the administration has made it quite clear to the interim authorities in Venezuela that this is the Western Hemisphere, and American dominance is going to continue under this president.
Okay, American dominance does not mean that we own the entire Western Hemisphere. American dominance can exist in multiple forms. During the Biden administration and over the past 20, 30 years, we have seen American dominance not because of military invasions in the Western Hemisphere, but because we've built up strategic alliances. The United States has become an indispensable economic and military partner to many countries, with NATO, with economic alliances. We are allies with Greenland, with Canada, with Mexico. These are not our enemies. We do not have to militarily dominate them. It's just so backwards because we already did have a lot of leverage over these countries. Not in a bad way, but these are our allies who we rely on and who rely on us. So the idea that we have to be threatening Greenland, like I'm about to play in this next clip, is just BS. We already have troops stationed on the ground in Greenland. We have U.S. military equipment in Greenland. We could send more military to Greenland in a friendly way. Nowhere in Western dominance is there the idea that we have to actually go in and militarily invade countries. It's backwards, and it's going to lead to an erosion of the global norms that have allowed the quality of life to increase in the West.
What purchase would look like?
Caroline.
Jackie.
Caroline, just following up on Greenland, why not rule out taking it by military force?
I know that past presidents and past leaders have often ruled things out. They've often been very open about ruling things in and basically broadcasting their foreign policy strategy to the rest of the world, not just to our allies, but most egregiously to our adversaries. That's not something this president does. All options are always on the table for President Trump as he examines what's in the best interests of the United States.
She literally just got asked, why can't you rule out military force against our NATO ally? And Caroline Leavitt's response makes no sense. It makes negative sense. She's saying it's because we don't want to telegraph or project what we're going to do next. But when we're projecting this type of weakness, this type of non-adherence to the global norms, we already are telegraphing what's coming next. When Donald Trump shows that he can't even stick to the global order that we've set out, that telegraphs something worse to our adversaries, that there is no global order anymore. It is despicable that the president of the United States, no one around the president of the United States, can even admit that we will not take over Greenland by force. She then gets asked a really good question. Hey, there are treaties that already give the U.S. access to construct and maintain military bases. What would we gain by militarily taking force or taking control of Greenland?
Just to follow up on Greenland, there are treaties already on the books that give the United States
access to the island. They can construct and maintain military bases there. We can house personnel on the island. The U.S. has control of landings, takeoffs, anchorages, etc. So I'm curious if you could just spell out for the American public, what specifically would the U.S. gain by taking control of Greenland that the U.S. doesn't already have access to right now?
More control over the Arctic region and ensuring that China and Russia and our adversaries cannot continue their aggression in this very important and strategic region. And there would be many other benefits as well that, again, the president and his national security team are currently talking about.
I'm going to end off by saying this. The exact type of aggression that Caroline Leavitt is talking about towards Greenland, number one, is now coming from the United States. But number two, can be deterred. First of all, we shouldn't even concede that Russia and China are surrounding Greenland. That's not the case because we already have U.S. troops to deter them. Greenland is a NATO ally. There is no reality in which it gets invaded by Russia or China without a world war starting. It is all just despicable that Caroline Leavitt and that Donald Trump are speaking like this. I'm going to leave it there. Drop a like, subscribe. I'll see you all in the next one. Peace out.